like they reacted to a similar move by Indonesia, claiming it breaches international trade rules.
So yes, I foresee, of course, threats. EU is known to be a threat. It has used a number of sanctions on African countries to make them accept unfair terms of trade, but also unfair policies, make them change their economic policies and even social policies. It might start threatening. That is most likely. It might start now. It might go in the EU Parliament and vote, maybe sanction Zimbabwe or something. That is most likely to happen. Even the European Development Fund, the EDF.
Western companies have been exploiting Africa's lithium mines and leaving the countries poorer, only to come back and sell them processed minerals in the form of smartphones, car batteries, and other rechargeable electronics.
In a bid to stop this exploitation, Zimbabwe has partnered with China and is now one of China's closest partners on the African continent. Now, this has led to anti-China rhetoric in Western media outlets. The Zimbabwean vice president has responded to this Western propaganda.
We get some uninvited voices talking about the friendship between the People's Republic of China and Zimbabwe, trying to blacken what has been achieved through the help from the People's Republic of China. So that in misinformation, disinformation, no matter how they will scream or shout, it is not going to destroy that comprehensive strategic partnership between the two people.
Others have interpreted Zimbabwe's move as beneficial to China and detrimental to Western powers that have imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe. Now, do you agree with this?
This is all about neocolonialism. This is all about imperialism. This is all about really Africa being a testing ground where all powers, all the emerging powers and the rich countries are flexing their muscles in terms of controlling Africa. It might, whether it is a threat, yes, it is a threat, of course. China is a threat to the United States.
Zimbabwe Mines Minister Winston Chitando says lithium export ban will ensure that the vision of the president to see the country becoming an upper-middle-income economy has been realized. Many Zimbabweans are hopeful that they will benefit from this historical decision. However, experts warn that the government needs to put mechanisms in place to ensure the country does not fall victim to the resource curse prevalent in Africa.
Unfortunately, there has always been a resource curse. Not only in Africa, in every country, majority of the global south, really, areas where these resources are found end up not benefiting. Actually, there is a lot of human rights violations and environmental destruction, displacement, sometimes there are civil wars, corruption, and all that. So there is a lot that the government of Zimbabwe needs to do. And to me, two or three things. One is investing the resources in social services.
Zimbabwe's ban on the exports of unprocessed lithium in 2022, followed by banning the exports of all raw mineral ores this year, is seen as a new wave of resource nationalism. The country is poised to immensely benefit from these decisions. An official at the new lithium processing plant explains.
This lithium resource will put Zimbabwe on the map as one of the premium suppliers of lithium into the world lithium battery market.
Do you think other African countries with strategic minerals such as nickel, graphite, cobalt and lithium will follow in Zimbabwe's footsteps and ban the export of unprocessed minerals? Or in other words, are we going to see a rise in resource nationalism and the end to the plunder of the continent's resources by Western multinationals?
If I was to create an utopia, I would say yes. I see African countries following Zimbabwe's her stance of resource nationalism, you know, of putting an end to export of raw materials. But I don't see that is just an utopia. It's just, it's a fantasy. It can't happen. Africa remains undivided ever, more than ever, actually, when it comes to speaking with one voice, when it comes to implementing things jointly.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up for today. Our guest there says that Africa needs to unite if the continent is to fully benefit from its vast mineral resources. I would like to apologize for the low quality voice of our guest. I would like to thank Africa Kiza for his insight today. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. Thanks a lot and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Many farm workers in the U.S. are still out of work and struggling to afford food in the wake of California's disastrous floods. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Throughout rodent disregard, workers in California who grow and pick the majority of fruits and nuts in the United States are experiencing an acute crisis of on- and underemployment and ensuing food insecurity following the procession of atmospheric rivers that drenched the state in January. In a mere matter of days, many locations across the Golden State absorbed the upwards of half the precipitation that tends to fall over the course of an entire year. Over 32 trillion gallons between December 25th and January 20th. Amid record drought conditions, soils shifted from scorched to soaked overnight, leading to hundreds of landslides, cars swept away by floodwaters, and at least 22 deaths. Farm owners are now tallying the damage to apply for federal disaster assistance, and amid the welcome sunshine, public discourse has turned to silver linings like the Fuller Reservoir and how the rainfall was great for agriculture. But the people at the heart of the fruit basket of the U.S., over three-quarters of nuts and fruits and one-third of vegetables consumed in the U.S. are grown in California. Farm workers have weathered long stretches without work or with significantly fewer hours, making it all but impossible to feed their own families. Julia Horta, a single mother of four who has lived in Oxnard, California for 10 years, felt the impact of the storms in December. Horta, who works growing blackberries and strawberries, made $200 per week that month, with fewer hours available due to wet conditions. It wasn't nearly enough to cover all of her expenses. Her rent alone is $2,000 per month, though she was able to feed herself and her children, who are 6, 10, 12, and 13 years old. She didn't work a single day in January because the fields were oozing with water and mud. Horta told Truthout, "It's really difficult to support my kids right now." When asked what she would like to see elected officials do to support farm workers like her who remain out of work or with lost hours, the first thing Horta listed and swiftly was migration reform, adding also help paying rent and food. Global warming caused primarily by the burning of fossil fuels is altering the behavior of atmospheric rivers. The vast aerial tides of water vapor thousands of miles long and hundreds wide that drive the majority of precipitation on the U.S. West Coast. As atmospheric rivers warm and widen, they are projected to produce winter storms dumping up to 40% more water by mid-century. The extremes have gave implications for the food system. In 2022, irrigated cropland in California shrank 752,000 acres when compared with 2019, due mostly to drought. Floodwaters are presenting a new layer of complications. Consumers who were already experiencing rising prices linked with extreme weather are now taking a hit for the January storms. As Andrew Stevens, assistant professor of agriculture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, told WEAU News. According to Stevens' projections, prices for produce like lettuce are likely to continue rising over the next few weeks due to a shortage in supply, though he expects the ripple effect will be short-term. Farm owners and other impacted agricultural operations are estimated to have absorbed millions in damages to livestock, crops, and infrastructure. But short of social reforms that take a stock of how climate change will heighten personal insecurity for the most vulnerable, perhaps no one stands to be more intimately impacted than the state's 500,000 to 800,000 farm workers, an estimated half of whom are undocumented and, under existing laws, do not qualify for unemployment or any other benefits. Even when hours are available, farm workers in the U.S. earn an average of $14,000 annually. As PRISM has reported, in spite of the complex skills required, that level of compensation does not leave workers with much potential for savings. Workers like Horta currently rely on support from food distribution events or effects like private campaigns. But anecdotally, thousands were still without work the last week of January, according to the United Farm Workers, UFW Communications Director Antonio De Lorella Brost, who noted that if studied comprehensively, that figure would likely be much higher, somewhere in the tens of thousands. Al Jazeera English also noted, California's agricultural workforce has long struggled with low wages and vulnerability stemming from immigration status. A mass shooting that killed 7 farm workers in the United States last week has brought renewed attention to the hardships faced by agricultural workers in the state of California, stretched thin by low wages and the high cost of living. The shooting on January 23 took place in the coastal community of Half Moon Bay, a small coastal town about 40 kilometers south of San Francisco in Northern California.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life for IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol. And one of my specialties is in taking some approaches that leads to having a better life. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations. In this episode of the program, I intend to go through a subject that most of us are involved with, which is the negative side of being talkative. A talkative man is someone who speaks a lot, and mostly what he says is full of trivial conversation and unimportant ones. Such a man talks too much about unwisely materials, and he is usually a big-mouthed man who cannot remain silent. A person who has this great appetite of talking usually leads himself to the detriment of his dignity and respect. Let me firstly refer to what Imam Ali says in this regard. The Imam says in Nahj al-Balagha, which is a well-known book for the Imam's sayings, and the Imam says, "Hanat alayhi nafsuhu man ammal alayha lisanah." The one who allows his tongue to overpower him has debased himself. Let's have a look at how a talkative man decreases his honor and respect. This man who is more eager to talk than to be a good listener usually deprives others from having a fortune to talk. When he is amongst his friend, he thinks that whatever he says is more interesting than others. While if he thinks more intellectually, he would admit that others also have a desire to talk. It could be interesting to note that if someone has a kind of feeling, he should feel that others may also have that kind of feeling. If I, for example, like to be admired, I should think that others also like to be admired as well. If I hate to listen to others, other people may also hate to listen to me so much. Why should I think that I am too inventive in pleasing others, more skilled in being funny and making others laugh, or more informative and more genius? Totally in opposition, we by talking so much may make others more bored and tired. Indeed, the outcome of his attitude is debasement and losing the value and a degree and a portion of esteem. The next negative effect of talking so much is that a man who have the incentive of talking and talking, since he cannot remember in which time he said which thing, he mistakenly repeats what he had said once in a meeting again when he meets those people in another time and in another meeting. He may also elaborate about the same subject while he does not know that prior to that, he talked sufficiently about that scenario and now is going to repeat the same again. Then people who are listening to him have two choices, whether to make him aware that he had talked about it and it would better not to repeat that, or to sustain the boredom of listening and bear it up with the hope that the man's speech comes to an end soon. Imam Ali, in another saying, says, "Man kathura kalamuhu kathura khata'uh." The one who talks so much faces with many mistakes. For example, he may say something and uncover a point that had better remain secret. That point would be better not to be revealed. He may uncover a point about someone that the man whose point was revealed would disgust it and later on blame him and complain for what he said. It is obvious that the words that do not originate from thought and reason and even piety in many cases create danger and unsatisfaction that humans are not able to compensate for and sometimes cause the resentment for honorable people. Some other people are going to hate it. It also may lead to discord and discomfort among people, and also brings about hatred and enmity towards the speaker.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Another problem for talking so much is that it leads to the waste of time. Why should we talk about every trivial, unimportant things while talking about them will give us no benefit? Let me add that even with regard to important things, we should push ourselves to our limit. I have seen in many occasions that some people, even when they want to analyze an important subject or to preach or even talk about a wisely point, elaborate about it so much that they make the listeners totally bored. It seems that they want to convey all of their information and knowledge about a specific subject to the people in just a single meeting. Once I remember that in a meeting, a man was asked to preach. It was about a year ago. The man recited a verse of the Quran and continued to talk about it for nearly 1 hour. Some people who were next to him, who wanted the session to be quitted, were put into a predicament since we could neither leave the place, it was against the respect the man had, nor could endure to listen anymore. When finally, due to our fortune, the man decided to end, told me that, alhamdulillah, I could describe the scenario sufficiently for 1 hour. But most of the people just can't remember from all of what we said, just a main subject and some small related point, and no more. People are not like a tape to record every point they listen for 1 hour. For the next time, if you try to talk again, some people, for fear that they might be stuck for an hour listening to you, their prior to your talk may leave the place, so that they don't be forced to be present until the end of your speech. As a result, if we want to talk about a useful point, we need to be concise and precise. Should not elaborate for a long time and become a talkative man. We are not the only one who knows everything, the only one who are skillful in interesting people, the only one who desire to speak. Other people also have their useful point of view. We need to train ourselves to be a good listener, even more than the desires of being a good speaker. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he
you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
As humans, the earth is our home. It is the only home we have. The earth is where we live, breathe, eat, and raise the future generation. Our entire life support system is dependent on the well-being of our natural environment and all of the species living on this beautiful blue planet. But what have we done to it? How have we preserved it? I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Unfortunately, our planet is in grave danger. Many species of animals and plants are nearing extinction. Our clean air and water supply is at risk, and more of our beautiful open spaces are disappearing as new buildings and factories are built. What is worse is that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer as we speak. This week's exclusive documentary explores the perilous state of our planet. Stay with us for the first part.
Casters have issued a tsunami warning.
Gives us a clear idea of what's happening.
The cloud is now moving south. It's harmless to people on the
ground. Covered with thousands of miles, why doesn't that energy dissipate?
The Earth isn't feeling well. Its fever has risen, and its situation is getting worse by the day.
Nowadays, we hear people saying the Earth's temperature is rising.
The average temperature of the Earth was about 15 degrees Celsius in the beginning of the 20th century. During the Ice Age, the average temperature of the Earth was only 5 degrees less.
Take into consideration this 15 degrees and compare it to the 10 degree average during the Ice Age. Now, if this 15 degrees, God forbid, reaches 19 or 20 degrees, what age could you call that? The ebullient age?
Naturally, the subsistence of life will end way before the ebullient age.
Of course, the Earth has other problems as well, but climate change or global warming is a major problem, which increases the frequency of drought, storms, and other consequences and natural disasters that take place on the Earth's surface.
The existence of icebergs in the north and south poles cause reflection of solar energy, which is known as albedo. Without an ice cover, this energy will be absorbed by the Earth's surface and accelerate global warming, altering the average temperature on planet Earth. We can say the Earth has a fever. It may be 1 degree or 1 2/100 degrees.
There's a very simple formula. Q is heat energy, which is equal to the mass of substance multiplied by C, which is a specific heat capacity multiplied by delta T. A 2-degree delta T, for instance, is multiplied by a huge mass at a specific heat capacity, which sums up to what? A very large Q. And what does that all mean? It means that all these signals I'm giving you are alarming. And it means that I'm continuously moving from the green line into the orange and red lines and into the danger zone.
Greenhouse gases are gases that can trap wavelengths larger than 4 microns within themselves. These are wavelengths that are radiated to the Earth from the Sun, and when reflected from the surface of the Earth, elements become trapped within the wavelengths. They trap greenhouse gases and absorb heat, which leads to the gradual warming of the Earth.
Just like inside a greenhouse, as in the ones used for farming, when solar radiation penetrates into it, the trapped heat is not completely removed, and it causes the inside of the greenhouse to become warmer than the outside. Greenhouse gases play the same role in the Earth's atmosphere.
Greenhouse gases per se are very useful. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which we usually refer to as carbon dioxide, is very useful because without these gases, the temperature of the Earth would fall to minus 19 degrees Celsius. Minus 19 degrees Celsius means a total freeze. It means no agricultural or farming product would be able to grow.
تا
Obviously, it wouldn't provide the requirements for human existence on the Earth. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and the partial trapping of energy reflections from the Earth have caused the Earth's temperature to rise to 15 degrees Celsius. In other words, greenhouse gases have caused a 34 degree temperature rise. This process has obviously created the ideal situation we have for all living creatures to thrive. A forest is one factor responsible for absorbing greenhouse gases. It is necessary for soaking up greenhouse gases. Unfortunately, forests around the world are being brutally desecrated for their wood and their land. You can see many instances of deforestation around the world. Deforestation has taken place to enable farming, but also for building factories and cities. When these forests are destroyed, the global sources for absorbing greenhouse gases are weakened.
With the proliferation of greenhouse gases and the increase of human activities on the surface of the Earth, which has provided the growth and spread of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the basis for absorbing and trapping thermal energy that is reflected from the surface of the Earth is further provided in the atmosphere.
The atmosphere's capacity for greenhouse gases is 2,900 gigatons. And until now, in the year 2010, about 65% of its capacity has been emitted. So from 2010 until the year 2100, the atmosphere only has the capacity to handle another 35%.
And obviously the basis has been provided for the Earth's average temperature of 15 degrees to rise to 15.5, 15.7 or 15.9 degrees and even to 16 degrees at times.
از این 1900 گیگاتون منتشر شده در کل جهان در اتمسفر.
A large portion of the 1900 gigatons emitted into the atmosphere belongs to countries which have caused more emissions starting from the 1840s and 1850s.
1840 و 1850 اینها رو بیشتر از کشورهای دیگر منتشر کرد. کشورهای در حال توسعه.
Developing countries with 81% of the world's population have only emitted 26% of these gases.
Therefore, we're facing a very serious humanitarian hazard, and we need to take serious measures to stop the emission of greenhouse gases.
Progress is being made, however. Beijing authorities are closing factories and outlawing burning coal for heating.
Naturally, a rise in the average temperature of the surface of the Earth from moderate levels can have bad consequences, and temperatures higher than that can pave the way for various disasters on the Earth's surface.
We're working in a totally unsustainable way. We do things to feel at ease, but we only have one planet Earth. We can't later immigrate and leave this planet. If we destroy it, where else can we go? This is it. And the destruction we're causing with technological development is enough to put our lives at risk now. As a human being, I'd ask, what sort of technological development have we accomplished? What sort of technology have we achieved? Or what have we done for human comfort that hasn't harmed us in any way? Give me one example.
The skyline is littered with factories, and toxic smoke pours into the air day and night. For those living here, it's a choice
between
pollution and
unemployment. The Federal Appeals Court upheld the Environmental Protection Agency's emission standards for hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. The court rejected state and industry challenges
to
rules designed to clean up mercury.
Top German lawmaker in the European Parliament said reducing supply in the CO2 trading market would boost prices.
What does it mean to live in a polluted place? It means that particles, say 5 microns, 2.5 microns and 1 micron increase. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide increase. Now it depends on the quality of the gasoline and the gas that you use. The sulfur and nitrogen derivatives, ozone and finally soot and particulates all scatter in the air and they eventually enter the body either through the nose or the mouth.
So body cells that start from the nose, eyes and mouth and reach the depth of the lungs are all affected, and these substances enter the bloodstream through the respiratory system.
It affects the brain. We become tired fast. We become impatient. We quickly lose our temper and verbally assault each other. There's no need for one to be ill. Those who are ill are at greater risk.
We see B2B, business to business. Just business to business. It's usually called B2B. This is a disaster. Even if it means death and costs us our lives, which is our most important index, we have a brain. We don't use it. The only thing we see in business is the money. Everything depends on how deep one's pockets are. Development is a natural process in human growth, which has existed for thousands of years. It's now been accelerated, becoming faster and stranger. But during this development process, some of us have become rich. Some are filling up their bank accounts and becoming wealthy. It's interesting, though, that these same people, sometimes directly, but most times indirectly, have to somehow return this money.
The oil leaked for 87 days, the worst offshore spill in U.S. history. BP was later found to be grossly negligent for the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon platform. And today, it agreed to a settlement that will include a $5.5 billion fine for violations of the Clean Water Act, $7.1 billion to the U.S. government and five states to repair coastlines smeared by oil, $4.9 billion to settle economic claims by those five states, and up to $1 billion to 400 local governments. Louisiana, the most heavily damaged, gets almost $7 billion, the biggest share.
This is by no means chance and accident. Our experience in development over the past 100 or 200 years shows that technological advancement and city living have been the cause of this. Name any technology you like, or whatever has made human existence easier, and you'll find it's harmed the environment.
China has announced the successful containment of its worst ever reported oil spill, although much work remains to be done before an ongoing cleanup is complete. At a media briefing, the vice mayor of the northeastern coastal city of Dalian, where the spill occurred, said workers had used more than 40 kilometers of oil barriers and 65 tons of absorbent pads to stop the slick reaching international waters. Yet with oil remaining on beaches and in the water, he also acknowledged a full cleanup will be an arduous task.
Go back 160 years in time to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, the industrial age in the 1850s, to see an impact.
It's been about a century that we humans have opted for consumerism on the earth, and as we have moved forward in recent decades, consumer demand has risen.
Until a point, we lived along with the earth and the nature. From a point onwards, we just forgot about what the earth is, where it's come from, and where this kind of usage will lead us to. We just want everything. The high consumer demand that we're witnessing these days is just destroying the earth's natural resources.
But a leading scientist suggests the reasons for the drought may be even more worrying for Brazil in the long run. Has continued deforestation in the Amazon and in the Atlantic forest drastically altered the climate?
We created the packaging industry to be able to easily relocate food products and conserve them for longer periods, so we would be able to keep a packet of food or fruit juice for, say, 2 weeks without it being spoiled. What's been the outcome? Go take a look at the landfills to see what we've done to the earth by producing all this garbage, garbage that can't be recycled. It was done for our comfort, but it's also put our future in danger.
If we move back a few decades, there were a limited number of countries that were consumer-based and that used a lot of energy and products like the United States and in Europe. But these days, global consumption on Earth has sharply increased as countries in East Asia, especially China, have started boosting their consumption.
About 56% of these greenhouse gases are produced by fossil fuels.
Naturally, the rise in the use of fossil fuels is due to energy requirements of machines used for ever-expanding development projects. To boost the machine age, the industrial age. Due to this boosting process, the developed world has had to increase its use of different kinds of fossil fuels. This has paved the way for partial deforestation, which aims to provide the agricultural requirements to cover total food needs of a growing global population. This causes change to the optimal 15 degree world average temperature.
In the northeastern prefecture of Miyagi, and what you're looking at right now on the screen is in the city of Sendai.
couple of feet of water, so they have to stand out there until they can manage to get the boat across and then take a big group of them into an entrance ramp of I-10.
In the limelight.
In the United States, Katie McEnany, a former White House press secretary, has been described as a liar and an opportunist by a former aide to Donald Trump. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Katie McEnany, Donald Trump's final White House press secretary, is a liar and an opportunist, according to testimony to the House January 6 committee by Alyssa Farah Griffin, formerly a communications director to Donald Trump. In testimony released on Thursday, 29th of December, Alyssa Farah Griffin was asked where McEnany fell after the 2020 election. Either, hey, we lost, let's gracefully exit, versus, let's facilitate the big lie that Donald Trump's defeat by Joe Biden was caused by electoral fraud. I'm a Christian woman, Alyssa Farah Griffin said, so I will say this. Katie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist. McEnany, who became a Fox News host after leaving the White House, did not immediately respond. Alyssa Farah Griffin now works for ABC. She also said McEnany was a smart woman and not an idiot. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces. And that was more important to her than telling the truth to the American public. McEnany has often addressed the issue of whether she lied while working for Donald Trump. When she first stood behind the White House podium in May of 2020, she promised to tell the truth to the American press. A reporter asked, "Will you pledge to never lie to us from that podium?" McEnany replied, "I will never lie to you. You have my word on that." She has repeated the claim, saying in June of 2021 she never lied as press secretary. McEnany also released a highly selective memoir, "For Such a Time as This, My Faith Journey Through the White House and Beyond." The book repeats the claim she never lied to reporters, in part because her education at Oxford, Harvard and Georgetown meant she always relied on truthful, well-sourced, well-researched information. Katie McEnany also spoke to the January 6 committee. In its report issued last week, it said, a segment of her testimony seemed evasive. In multiple instances, McEnany's testimony did not seem nearly as forthright as that of her press office staff, who testified about what Katie McEnany had said. The committee also noted that though McEnany disputed suggestions that President Trump was resistant to condemning the violence and urging the crowd at the Capitol to act peacefully when they crafted his tweet, at 2:38 p.m. on 6th of January 2021, one of her deputies, Sarah Matthews, told the Select Committee that McEnany informed her otherwise. Griffin, who left the White House in December of 2020, told the committee she did not confront McEnany while both worked for Donald Trump, adding that she got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she'd always planned for it to, but she knew better. Griffin also described the chaotic workings of the Trump White House, which she called the flattest organization I've ever worked in, meaning the one with least distance between staff at the bottom and the top. She said Mark Meadows, Donald Trump's final chief of staff, meant to control access to the president, was a true believer to the end. Griffin told the committee, "I would see press assistants in the president's personal dining room and not know how they got there," a press assistant being a very junior staffer. Accounts of senior staffers' attempts to control access to Donald Trump are legion. According to a book by Stephanie Grisham, Kylie McEnany's predecessor as press secretary and a longtime aide to the First Lady Melania Trump, one press aide in particular caught Donald Trump's attention. Stephanie Grisham wrote, "I began to notice that he was taking an unusual interest in a young, highly attractive press wrangler on my team. What I do know is that he behaved inappropriately, and since the woman worked for me, I tried to protect her and keep his unusual interest in her under wraps." According to Stephanie Grisham, Donald Trump told one of her deputies to bring the woman up to the office cabin on Air Force One so he could look at her. Grisham said she came close to telling Melania Trump about such behavior, but was not alleging that anything happened between the president and the woman. "It would have been pretty hard for him to pull that off, even if he wanted to," she said. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Former Trump White House Communications Director Alyssa Farah Griffin called former White House Press Secretary Kylie McEnany a liar and an opportunist in her interview with the House Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Alyssa Farah Griffin's scathing view of Kylie McEnany, her former colleague, was included in a batch of interview transcripts released by the House panel on Thursday, 29th of December. In the interview, Farah Griffin criticized Kylie McEnany for helping perpetuate the notion that the 2020 election was stolen. "I'm a Christian woman, so I will say this. Kylie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist," Farah Griffin said in her April interview with the committee. "She's a smart woman. She's a Harvard law graduate. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces." She said McEnany wasn't a true believer in the idea that former President Donald Trump actually won the 2020 presidential election. After leaving the Trump administration, McEnany secured a job as a contributor to Fox News Channel. Farah Griffin pointed to her new cable news spot in her interview with the panel, saying, "She got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she's always planned for it to, but she knew better." Farah Griffin, who is now a co-host of ABC's The View, said, "She thinks most people around Donald Trump know that the former president lost the 2020 presidential election. The only people I think are true believers are like Dan Scavino, John McEntee, Mark Meadows, to some degree," she told the House panel. Farah Griffin resigned from the Trump administration in December of 2020, just weeks before the official end of Donald Trump's term in office. She told the website Politico in January of 2021 that she stepped down because, "I saw where this was heading and I wasn't comfortable being a part of sharing this message to the public that the election results might go a different way."
This is IRIB English Radio.
IB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.